Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ah, hello there, dear listener. It's me, Joe. I notice you've tuned in once again to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. Just remember, we dish out double the content over on our Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds. Go on, you'll love it. You'll pay your monthly fee and I will literally roll around in your hard-earned cash, probably wearing something provocative. Jay's not going to like this advert at all.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
Second verse, same as the first, a little bit louder and a little bit worse.
And we have swapped Jay Cross for Matt Knight.
I'm back, baby.
Yes, that's right. Matt is back from the dead, but we don't have... Jay Cross. So we still don't have a full team. So even after what must be 7 or 8 weeks, we have failed to actually get the four.
This is the beauty of the Guitar Nerds podcast, though. People can switch in and out. You know, it's still good stuff. We're still giving...
Do people even remember who I am?
Well, yeah. There have been several people on the group who have mentioned that you might have died.
Yeah.
And they were sad about that. But
I just went all over Europe. I've done 7 countries already this year, including the UK.
You can't count the UK. Come on.
I can. If I have to go out of it and back into it, at one point I left it. Might not have even been part of the EU by the time I came back.
Yeah, so, that is true. That was dangerous. But I don't think you can count the UK in the country.
Wait, are you counting the UK every time you come back?
Yeah, I've done 7 countries.
He's
actually only done 3.
Yeah. But it is fantastic to have you back on the podcast, Matt, because when you are not on the Guitar Nerds podcast, I find it very difficult for us to do any subjects in depth, because you're very much the capacitors and resistors man. You're the knowledge guy.
Whereas, I'm the one that holds everything together, like George Harrison.
Yeah, exactly. In many ways, that is true. Whereas, you know, we've got, it's fine for Mark because we can talk about, if we talk about something that's been in production for a long time, then Mark can talk about, you know, 20 years ago when he sold it in a shop.
Did my first day at a guitar shop 20 years ago this year.
That is an outrageously long amount of time ago to have worked in a guitar shop.
Still be talking about it now.
Still kicking.
That's not even... I was about to say that's not even the 21st century, but that's true.
It's true. It wasn't in the 21st century. But yeah, I was trying to remember, and I wonder if I can go back and find it, like what day it actually was when I started.
Which guitar shop?
GAC.
It was GAC.
Yeah, did my work experience at GAC. And then, so that was like a week. And then didn't work there for like another year after that. And then, worked there. And we all know how that ended. Ended with me sitting around this table with you chumps.
Yeah, that is...
What did you do on your first day, Mark?
Loads of hoovering. And that's why I got a job a year later. It's because they remembered me for the person who had done the best hoovering. Oh. And that's what they needed, someone who was actually good at doing
the
hoovering.
You know, the great thing is even when we worked at the store together, we'd still do the hoovering.
Oh, yeah, 100%. What amazes me is that we'd got to the point where we had work experience people and they were so rubbish at doing the hoovering, we still did the hoovering. Even like 15 years later, just shows, you know, it was always there inside of me, the ability to be the best. And
hoovering, yeah.
And
hoovering.
Yeah. Hoovering. And, you know, I'm not afraid every now and then to whip the old Hoover out.
No, absolutely. If there's one thing I know about you, it's that whipping Hoovers out is...
I love to whip it out.
Absolutely. Matt, how did you start your first day at a guitar shop?
I held the door open for the new owner of the store on the first day he opened. It's a little bit of it's a bit of a loser story.
Where
but
are you
I'll
from?
I'll tell
you're
anyway.
From Ipswich.
Ipswich. So Ipswich had like the guitar shop. It was actually called the guitar shop.
Creatively named.
Yeah, and it was like one of the. It was a wicked store actually. It was built in a building that dated to like from the like 1400s outside this old manor house in this country park, and it had like three or four different floors. It was this really cool interior building. This guy had run it for years, and then he was one of the kind of the last big stores before everyone started moving to mail order, and I don't think they could have really ever been set up to do that. So he sort of closed it, kind of breaking even, and then this other guy who I'm still friends with basically moved down from London. He'd worked at a record label for years, had enough, and he was like, I'm going to open a music shop. And this would have been, what, 2002, 2003? And I went down. So this shop had been closed for ages, and then one day my mate phoned me and went, oh, I've heard the guitar shop's reopening. So I went back down, and it was actually really busy. And I sort of went in to go and introduce myself, but then I sort of spent the whole day in there just like meeting people as they came in, like holding the door open while I was trying to talk to the owner about why he'd come down to reopen the store. And then he gave me like 20 quid out the till and then told me to come back next Saturday. And then that's what I did. and that's how I learned everything I know.
Wow.
You can't teach that.
Because Matt can hold doors open and you can hoover.
Yes.
That is impressive.
How about you, Joe? Wasn't your first day in a music shop at GAC?
Yeah.
In like, no, like 4 years ago.
No, I worked at Stan's Guitars, you know, sort of like quite casually.
Stan.
Well, it was, yeah, as in Stan. His name was Stan. There wasn't a name on the guitar shop as such. I'm pretty sure.
There wasn't a name on it.
I'm from Watford and this was. And
people there can't read.
this was on Queen's Road in Watford. Now, Stan's, I mean, I would be very surprised if Stan was actually making his money from selling guitars in that guitar shop.
I see.
Yeah, it was a strange place, and Stan was a funny guy. But he had some fantastic, weird, old gear in that shop. But yeah, the guitarist in my band was working there, so when Stan needed extra help, I used to come in and do that. So that was my first one, but it wasn't really very proper, no. My first proper guitar shop job was in GAC, and of course I didn't even get the blooming job.
Yeah, biggest mistake we ever made was hiring you.
Yeah,
we should have stuck with our original decision.
No one. I actually found a picture on our friend Krista's Instagram of when you and him worked in the bass department together and both had massive ridiculous mustaches.
God, that was honestly, and that was the best time in GAC history. Both of us
customers
had
used
huge...
to come out and be like, oh yeah, I've spoken to someone in the bass department. I was like, was it the one with the moustache or the other one with the moustache?
We both had, for the listener, at the time, we both had massive, very well-waxed, curly moustaches. We were gentlemen. It was a gentleman's bass department. It was good. Oh,
those were the days.
Those were the days. Yeah, absolutely. I miss Krista. We were terrible two people to have running a department.
Two drunks, like, basically.
If you think about how often we were late and or drunk and or still in fancy dress from the night before.
I mean, you look like you're in fancy dress most of the time anyway.
That's the only time the only reason we got away with it. Yeah, absolutely.
We'll talk about this after the podcast, but I saw Krista this weekend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'll tell you how he is, but it's not really podcast material.
Oh, yeah.
No one else knows who he is.
You know who he is. It's totally pointless.
Yes, fine. But actually, we did, in fact, see Matt the other day because me and Mark took a trip For guitar nerds and reverb, respectively, to go and see Matt at the Boss. What do you call it? Is it the Boss Artist Centre?
The Roland Artist Centre.
Roland Artist Centre, yes. Where was that? Where did we go?
Metropolis Studios in Chiswick.
Yeah. And Metropolis Studios. Yeah, we went there because you were doing a little presentation and demonstration of the Wazzacraft Amp Expander.
Yeah, or as you like to put it, the most expensive volume control available for your guitar rig.
Yes, that is what it is. Yes, absolutely.
Before you get into it, Matty, I was very surprised because I went in being quite sceptical, mainly because I hadn't had a chance to hear it yet, and also because Joe keeps reinforcing that thing of it's just a volume control, it's just a volume pedal. It's actually way more than that.
Yeah, yeah, it's tricky because it doesn't seem like a very rock and roll product. Like anything that's essentially designed to reduce the noise of something, it just seems so counter rock and roll, you know.
Yeah, I guess the more I've sort of talked about it and the more I've presented it to people and the more that I sort of dive into it, the more I'm like, actually, this is just a cool product to have with your valve amp.
Yeah.
And actually, it gets so much more out of your amp that realistically you might not be able to get otherwise. And one thing I always remember is plugging people in a guitar shop to, like, you save up for a year and you go, oh, I'm going to go and buy a Hampstead Artist 60 and a cab and it costs you $3,000, and the store's like, I'll let you turn it up for 5 minutes, and you're like, this sounds great, and then you get it home and then everyone's like, yeah, can you turn it down, it's like super loud. So you'd like put it on one and then it just sounds rubbish because you're not pushing any air out of the amp and you're not driving the amp in any way.
Sure.
And then this actually allows you to really get something out of your amp at a much more usable volume without the negatives of an old attenuator. Because I remember having an old Mesa Boogie combo and buying a THD hot plate, and the more I turned up the volume and the more I attenuated, the worse it sounded.
Yeah.
To the point where I was like, I might as well just not use it.
Well, explain that for a bit, because that's the interesting thing about the amp expander and what separates it from a normal attenuator. So like, talk us through what, you know, I guess what makes it reactive, because that's what this is coming down to.
The reactive load part isn't something unique to the tube amp expander. Obviously, things like Oxbox and other units like the Surt IR loader and all that have a reactive load in. What a reactive load is mimicking the impedance curve of a guitar speaker and what that back and forth interaction between your amp and the speaker actually is. There's a physical current that goes between the two. And different speaker loads will affect the way that your amp responds. So it's not just the sound coming out of the speaker, it's the way that it will respond physically to the speaker load. So what the tube amp expander does is mimic different types of speaker load in an analog world. So you can dial in the type of speaker load to your amp. So if you're using something high gain, like an old Marshall Plexi, it's going to respond and feel very different running into a 412 as it was through a 112. So this box basically mimics the load of a speaker, so your amp thinks it's plugged into a speaker and will work and respond as though it was plugged into a speaker. But then what it's doing is, rather than then pumping that sound straight back out into the speaker and then you're attenuating it through resistors, which ultimately lose top end, that was always the problem with things like hot plates. You're physically resisting the load out of the load box into the speaker. This basically reamps the whole thing through a 100-watt solid-state power amp. So any amp you plug into it, a 100-watt amp is still 100 watts, but you can wind it down. But a 1-watt amp could technically be 100 watts. But it's not resisting the amount of load going to the speaker. It's physically reamping it through another volume control, as it were.
Right.
So you can basically always turn it up or down, but the important thing is when you turn it down, you don't lose any feel or response.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of key part to it. There's a bunch of other stuff that it does, but that's the key part to it. So rather than like clicking to find the right, you know, setting out of potentially like 5 or 6 settings that might just be the volume you want, this physically allows you to turn it up and down like a master volume control, but without physically changing the sound of your amp. And I think that was what was really key, is that your amp just sounds the same no matter what volume it's at. It's right. not like, you know, and there was a couple of great things that we did with a couple of other Victory amps. It's just, you know, being able to crank it to the point where you wouldn't normally be able to use it, because even at gigs, sound engineers like, oh, I've mic'd it up, so you can just turn it down. And you're not really working your amp to its potential. So this allows you to unlock a lot of what your amp can do without annoying people, basically.
Yeah,
I guess is a simple way to put it.
I think that was that's what stuck out for me, is just like how similar it sounded with the tube amp expander on, just turned down. The signal that you were getting through the desk, but like also through the cab as well, just sounded awesome. Just a really neat little box. And for, you know, for someone who loves valve amps but can't really crank them at home, it's ideal, absolutely ideal. And then you've obviously got the speaker sim out for recording as well.
Yeah, and because it's an audio interface as well, integrates with, you know, your DAW. For me, it's just great. Actually, I never need to use a normal audio interface because I don't do any recording. I don't mic anything up. I don't mic up a cab, and I don't do any vocals. So you actually just leave that plugged in via USB all the time.
Yeah.
And then just use it as your audio interface. You just turn your amp on and you can just record straight away. And I thought that was great. And then being able to go and hear that through headphones and actually like be able to decide what, you know, speaker cab simulation you want to hear into the headphones as well makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So I think it would be great for people who actually want to record at home. Obviously, a lot of people are like, oh, it is expensive.
How much is it?
I mean, they will be about €12.99, so in pounds, about £11.50.
So it's very much geared up to be a professional tool, like to sit in a rack in a studio.
I think so. I think, you know, again, coming back to this, like if you saved up to buy your dream amp, and you spent $4,000 and you know, on this like Friedman the amount of times it would be rarer potentially, but you know, someone would come in and buy a full mess of Boogie stack and then you're like, oh, it sounded great in store when I could crank it and now I can't at all. You know, now you can actually get your amp working, get a decent sound, but at low volumes. I think it's just a really nice addition to a rig, you know, as a whole, because I think it just completes a setup, basically.
Yeah, sure.
Whether you're using it at home casually or whether you're going to use it live. But that was the great thing, is that you can set it up at home and then take it to a gig and have exactly the same sound and not be reliant on what cab's going to be at the venue or anything like that. You know, you can feed it straight into a desk. You don't even need to take a cab with you anymore.
I think what would be great about it is because, like, I've got a friend who runs a studio, and, you know, most of the time now he's just using Kempers, but he loves great valve amps. So I think it's that kind of halfway between those two things.
You're making valve amps a part of the digital world, aren't you?
Yeah.
That, you know, it's of course, you know, things like, well, the GT1000 and things like Helix have, you know, the ability to do exactly this same sort of silent stage thing, or this, you know, any amp you want in a studio thing. But if you actually still really do like that valve amp sound, now the valve amp doesn't have to have the disadvantage of being too loud on stage or not being able to run through the front of house and integrate with everything else. Yeah, it's cool.
I can see it as totally as a studio tool for that. You know, if someone's got a really good collection of valve amps, but, you know, they're getting to the stage where the last thing they want to do is be spending tons and tons of time micing stuff up, you know, or if they've got to do like a quick session or something like that, you could just have this in the rack. The band then brings their amp in, brings their head in, and then you go, okay, fine, yeah, you can use that, no problem. We don't need to mic it, it's fine. We'll just run out of your head into this cab sim, and then it sounds great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the thing. In a studio, you know, even for me, I might like go into somewhere like Brighton Electric that has tons and tons of amps on the racks, but... You know, but what if I want to, in the main studio in Brighton Electric, you've got the drum room and then you've got the room with the desk, and it's got a little booth in it that you can put the guitar amp through. But what if you all want to record live? You could, the bass player would have to sacrifice and go full digital, but with, you know, or, you know, all the guitarists would have to, someone would have to just have guide, because you couldn't have everyone running through real cabs. Now you'd have the option of just choosing a head, running it through that, and being able to Yeah, I'm into it. I think it's a cool solution.
So your one over is not just a volume pedal anymore.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm never ever going to buy one. It's not for me. But,
sure.
But yeah, I think, you know, fine. It's a cool studio solution, and I like that it's bringing valve amps into the digital world.
That's exactly what I see this box as. You know, it's not a glamorous product. It's very much
That was kind of my problem. It's like a rackable black box.
Yeah.
That allows an amp to be a bit quieter.
I know you like the look of it.
It does it really well.
I know that you like the look of it, Matty, but for me, if it did all the things that it does, but it was in like
the chassis
of the Oxbox,
yeah,
which looks a bit more kind of nice IKEA furniture-y, I'd be happier with that.
Yeah, wood wings.
Wood is good.
Like the Junos, you know.
Wood is good. Okay.
Wood is good. So, this weekend just gone, I went to a festival. It was Bad Pond Festival over at Concord 2 in Brighton, which, listener, is a fantastic venue, one of the best in Brighton.
Were you in a bad pond of your own sick?
I didn't. I wasn't sick. I was not sick, which is amazing because this festival was sponsored by Fireball. So when I turned up backstage, I was greeted by a bottle of cinnamon alcohol.
Is that cinnamon vodka?
Yeah, I don't know.
I've heard of Fireball before. Yeah. I've heard it in the same sentence as stuff like Thunderbird, which I believe is also very strong.
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't know. It was fine. It was a very cinnamon-heavy shot. But yeah, you know, it was good. So, you know, we had that, had a bottle of that, and then played a show. But no, it was a really good festival. It was like, there were some. It was headlined by Jamie Lenman, who, is still.
I don't know who that is. That sounds like a kids' TV presenter.
He used to be. He was like the guitarist in a band called Ruben.
Oh yeah,
some time ago,
like the Bagel.
But he, But he plays like an old Yamaha, like an old weird sort of 80s Super Strat Yamaha.
Okay.
I don't know what it is. It's covered in stickers. It's like his first guitar,
right?
Which is really weird because he has a well waxed mustache and wears gentleman suits. Has like all
but
these
he's playing some cheap
lovely
Super Strat.
This wall of white amplifiers, and then he has this really cheap covered in stickers.
That's very odd.
Yeah, it's very very weird. Very weird. But yeah, there I saw some fantastic bands. I'm going to put some pictures in the group of one three piece I saw called Clip Drip, who they're a three piece with just a singer and a drummer, and then the guitarist, who was absolutely fantastic and has the largest pedal board I think maybe I've ever seen.
Really?
And it was fantastic. The sounds he was getting, like the sort of big fat like machine gunny tones, like they sound like it's kind of like his guitar sounds, it's like almost dance music from the guitar. That's a terrible way to describe them because they're just this incredible super aggressive band, but yeah, everything sounds like a synthesizer coming from his guitar. It's the most outrageous things, playing all this massive pedal board with a gig rig, with the biggest size gig rig switcher. All of that, and he was playing through an Epiphone Les Paul, one of the bolt-on ones, where he'd just taken out the pickups and put some sort of Gretsch pickup in the bridge, and that was
what was it, like a Les Paul Special?
Yeah,
like
well,
a flat top one.
No, so it wasn't the flat topped one. It
was it like the LP 100?
Yeah, the LP
100, worst one,
the worst,
the absolute worst one. Your description of what he sounds like reminds me of a band called Adabisi Shank.
Right?
Do you remember them?
Remember the name.
Yeah.
Band.
What? Sorry,
great
Matt.
Band.
Great band.
Great band.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. No, they're not together anymore. I'm just having a look at the Wikipedia. They finished up in 2014. He was using tons of pedals, wasn't he, Matt?
Yeah, they had. I think like he was using Whammy quite a lot because they had that sort of like really glitchy sort of computer game-esque vibe to them.
Yeah,
there was another band I saw the other day that were doing a very, very similar thing as well. And I'll have to try and find the name. Maybe I'll share it in the group, who, yeah, had a similar vibe to that.
One of the most interesting things I think that this fella was doing is he was running everything through a Boss slicer In order to create the rhythms, the beats.
It's the pedal that's so far ahead of its time.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
I don't understand how it hasn't, you know, people are like talking about like Strymons and getting weird effects and stuff like that. You never see the SL20.
No, they've always been there. And this is the thing, another one, this other pedal is a pedal that the guitarist in my band has and a number of other people in our genre, the Digitech Timebender. The most underrated, super cool, weird delay pedal.
I wonder what they're going for these days.
Well, I don't know. He got it for about £50. And then, this guitarist was running everything through the slicer, then sampling it into the TC Electronic Ditto times 4.
Okay.
And then was able to bring bits in and out, like beats in and out via that. And then I did notice, weirdly positioned at like the end of the chain, was, do you remember the yellow double boss pedal?
The distortion one?
Yeah.
20
at the end.
Well, it's positioned at the end. Obviously, that doesn't really have to mean anything, but I thought that was quite interesting.
Way ahead of its time.
Yeah,
I need 20.
Well, yeah, I mean, what
drive zone?
More so than the slicer.
The OD 20 came out in, I think it was like 2007, 2006, right. But there wasn't really anything that was doing. Like, so this, for people who haven't seen it, it's got, was it 3/6? I think it's 12 distortion types with a variation on each one of those. So it modeled the HM2, which everyone goes on about, and the MT2. It did all the stuff like the original OD1. Then it did things like a Klon Centaur, a Big Muff, and like and a Rat. You could have 4 memories, and you could control your amp channel with it as well. So you could go to one memory that would be like an OD1, and then you could go to the fuzz face, but you could also press the amp control button so it could change the channel on your amp as you change the preset. So you could have a boost going into a distorted side of your amp or a fuzz going into the clean side. With an always on, you just had to dial it in heavy octave blend. So you could literally, any sound, you could blend in a lower octave. I thought it was a wicked pedal.
I sort of feel like if you had the pedals from that series, if you had the slicer, the OD20 and the RE20, in itself, that would be quite a good rig, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'm tempted to just buy like an old RE20 and an old slicer and just have those two.
Slicers were good. Tim actually sold his recently. Or maybe he didn't. Maybe he hasn't sold it yet. I wonder if I can borrow it off of him if he hasn't.
They're still current, right, Matty?
RE20?
No, SL20.
Slicer.
SL20. Yes and no. You can still get them, but they are, I think, out of production now.
Right, fine. Yeah, just looking at a shop here, there's still got some in stock. So, it was so far ahead of its time doing like the 3D, like fake 3D audio. Yes, it did that. Exactly that. Rhythmic tremolo delay.
That's what you want.
Very interesting indeed. Love them.
Absolutely. So at this Bad Pond Festival, other than drinking an entire bottle of Fireball, I was also going to be performing a show. And so a few days before, I'd brought along my sort of now set up again jazz bass. I've got a really nice, it's the Lacquer series. It's the Mexican made, but they did a Lacquer series of the 60s jazz bass. I've got one of those with like some antiquity pickups in it, which are really nice, like lovely sunburst thing. So I'd normally play that for shows. And I brought that to rehearsal for the first time, having played my recently acquired real 1969 precision bass. And I played it, and the rest of my band were like, man, that doesn't sound as good as, you know,
the
P bass
sounds the best.
And I was like, man, in 6-7 years of being in this band, I don't think any of you have ever commented on my bass tone. So I'm going to take that as a sign that this 69P bass is fantastic. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to play it at this gig, this first gig we'll have had since I've had this P bass. I'm going to play it at this festival. And I was like, oh, do I want to play it at a festival where, you know, it's going to go into like storage with a load of other bands? It's very expensive. I haven't put it on my insurance yet. You know, I've never gigged a bass this expensive. I'm used to sort of getting really drunk and then throwing my instrument at people. Like, I can't do that. So I was in two minds about it, but I was like, no, it sounds so good and I want to sound so good. So I took the precision bass and of course you play a little bit more aggressively live than you would in a rehearsal studio. First track comes to the big old heavy bit. I I give it a good old smack, and the nut splits in half, and the E string flies off the board, and there I was left with probably 3 minutes into the set, and of course I was so drunk that the guys were like, they were like, do you want us to bring your backup bass through, because the backstage was quite a long way away, because there were two stages at the Concord. So
Weren't you in the bar?
We were in the bar stage.
Course.
Yeah,
makes sense.
So I was like, no, it's fine. Leave my backup bass. So there was no way of getting it now. So because there would be another band on in the other area, I couldn't get through. So I had to just transpose the rest of our set onto the remaining three strings.
I'm sure it was great. I know that you, after a bottle of Fireball plus transposing onto not the normal string, I can't imagine it turned out well.
No, it's fine. I think I did an all right job, to be honest. And I was still able to, what I managed to do was just sort of like, I could hold the string on, and then I was able to sort of tune it so it was just in enough that I could still get some open sort of low D if I needed.
Do we know if it was the original nut?
It wasn't. No,
it wasn't. Okay,
so it wasn't. I actually had it.
I was going to say, it's lasted 50 years and you've broken it in a couple of minutes.
Because I play very thick strings, I had to have one recut for it. So
did you keep the original?
I've got the original, and I've got the original, and you know, I've got both pieces of the new one. but anyway, you know what? It just reaffirmed to me that, you know, cheap basses are great.
Cheap basses are great. All basses are great. but you should just put a new nut on it and stop playing stupid tunings, and it'll be fine.
Yeah.
And you know, if not, just give it to me.
That's never happened on any of my jazz basses.
Well, yeah, but
it's got nothing to do with the nut. No. With the bass, is it? The nut.
It's literally, you were probably just a bit more hammered than normal and accidentally smashed it a bit more hard, a bit harder than normal.
Yes, exactly. That is almost definitely the case. Shall we have a look and see what's in the news this week? So, first up, Fender. I mean, this isn't especially new news. This was around last week, but I want to talk about it nonetheless. Fender have done something that's gone against, I think, what really they've been doing very well recently, which is having their finger on the pulse. And they've gone against that by making a load of Game of Thrones guitars.
Game of Thrones. Branton is a knob. So this is the collaboration between Fender, Game of Thrones, the Game of Thrones dudes and dudettes. I believe it was DB Weiss, who is one of the showrunners, who actually is involved in this.
Just a runner.
No. The showrunner is like the catch-all name for someone who makes the show happen. Right. In this case, I think they're Game of Thrones creator, he's listed as, but I think he's like script, and I think he directed a couple of episodes and stuff. Right. I believe he is a guitar player, this is basically a collaboration between him and the Game of Thrones license and Fender Custom Shop. So three guitars inspired by the house sigils of Game of Thrones, Lannisters, Starks, and Targaryens.
So they didn't do a Baratheon.
There is no Baratheon, unfortunately.
Is that because the Baratheons aren't in it anymore?
Are there any? I mean, there's no. Yeah, that.
There's the one on the boat.
Yeah, sure, he's on the boat. Huh? No Game of Thrones spoilers, thanks. And yeah, so there's basically three guitars, each based on one of the house's sigils. So you've got a telly bearing the Stark emblem.
That's good, isn't it? Yeah. That suits well, the Stark.
I'll give you a little
sort of working person's guitar.
Totally. The Lannisters have got a Jaguar.
I don't know about that.
Targaryens are on a Strat. Mm. I think it makes total sense. I think. Totally. Starks is working man, so you've got your telly.
Yeah.
You've got Lannisters on the fancy, and I'll go through the spec in a minute.
Be Jazzmaster if it's fancy.
No, the Jaguar's fancy.
Jaguar's not fancy.
What do they call this? Jaguar,
they do call it a Jaguar,
And then, you know, somewhere in the middle, you've got the Strat for the Targaryens.
Yeah,
so
makes sense.
What
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
What makes it so expensive? Are they one-offs?
They're not one-offs. They are, as far as I'm aware, they are built as they sell.
How expensive are they then?
So let me do a quick rundown and give you... So these are built by Ron Thorne, who's the master builder, who is kind of, I guess, the most prominent master builder these days. He's the one whose name we hear most, particularly for these kind of show pieces. Right. He does very, very intricate work, and that's definitely the case here. So let's go one by one. So House Stark Telly, $25,000. Lightweight swamp ash body with a sterling silver binding, I believe. Yeah, it's kind of like a binding, but wow. It's like on top of the guitar. It's kind of like an inlay on the body, sterling silver. And it's got kind of like a... how would you describe it? They call it... haven't got the name here, but it's kind of like a washed grey... You know, it's very kind of stark... iron Winterfell kind of vibe to it.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much just a telly. There's nothing else particularly going on. You've got the Direwolf sigil on the scratch plate, which is a metal scratch plate, and two hand-graved knobs, and that's about it. There's not a huge, not much else to say about
right,
that.
Sure.
That's kind of the most basic of the lot. So next up, you've got the Lannister's Jaguar, $30,000. This is an alder body. And the key thing about this is the top is inlaid with 24 karat gold leaf. And it's like, it looks like, almost like the carpet that would be in one of the... or like from the background of a flag of the Lannisters.
Sure, sure.
It's very, very...
Tapestry-esque.
Yes, very regal. So, yeah, you've got this kind of, yeah, as you say, gold leaf tapestry. And they did say what colour. Actually, they've got it listed here as burnt crimson, as the finish that's underneath the gold leaf. But it's kind of like a... It was described in the video as a Dakota red. So it's that kind of very... Very contrasty red.
Yes. Blood red.
With the gold.
Pickups are interesting.
So there are actually two strap pickups in 24 karat gold... like lipstick covers.
Yeah.
So again, you know, it doesn't particularly look like, they don't look like Jazzmaster pickups. Control layout is the same as a regular Jaguar. And you've obviously got the Jaguar bridge on there as well. And then last up, the House Targaryen Strat. Now this one is the most interesting to me because this one takes the most time. So watching the video with Ron Thorne, he was saying that it normally takes him to like carve and kind of get into shape a strat body.
Right.
Normally takes him around 2 hours. He was saying that this takes somewhere in the region of 20 hours because the top is actually textured, kind of like a wood pattern, I guess. How do they describe it here? Dragon scales. That's what it is,
yeah.
Of course, because it's House Targaryen. So, yeah, it's kind of a scaled finish. And it looks absolutely incredible in the video.
Is that hand-carved?
It is hand-carved, yeah.
You would have thought that... I mean, maybe, because obviously it's master built, but surely you could burn that in. Like, you could laser print that. You could laser do that on a CNC machine.
So interestingly, the gold leaf, I believe, is laser cut. But this, he says something about in the video that they just couldn't get it right. So yeah, it's all done by hand, which is why this one is the most expensive at $35,000.
Goodness me.
Indeed. In terms of spec on this one, you know, again, there's nothing particularly standout. You know, it's just a strap, but it's got these incredible hand carving on it. And yeah, so there's some more stats here. So they reckon that if you were going to build all three guitars, it takes around 300 hours to do the set. And I believe you can buy them as a set as well. Each comes with a custom strap. The cases, here we go. Game of Thrones House Stark Telecaster guitar case features a faux wolf fur lining and a black suede exterior as an homage to the Direwolf sigil. The House Lannister Jaguar guitar case features gold accents, including a crushed gold velvet interior and all gold hardware. The House Targaryen Strat guitar case boasts an all-black reptile design on its exterior with red stitching inside and out. So they're being very, very spot on, very on the nose with the kind of adornments of these guitars.
My only issue here is the sort of person who is obsessed with an HBO television series.
Yeah.
About boobies.
It's not about
swords,
that.
Right, right, okay. Essentially, you know, Peter Stringfellow's Lord of the Rings here. Is the sort of person who's into those sorts of things also someone with $35,000 of dispensable cash?
Well, you know what I always think? If someone is willing to spend $10,000 on Gene Simmons' bass after a Kiss show, then there's definitely someone out there willing to spend $30,000 on something like this. And do you know what's interesting? The more I think about it, the more I'm like, we're so used, especially in the time that we've been podcasting to, and even really in the time that we've probably worked in stores, Mark maybe saw the tail end of it, but Fender doing like classic Fender designs. And I think it started with like Mike Eldred, like going, oh, we're going to make an Esquire and we're going to relic it. But actually, Fender Custom Shop was never about that.
Yeah.
Fender Custom Shop was always about the absolute ridiculous. And I mean, I used to have the Fender Custom Shop book from like the late 80s to the kind of late 90s.
But we've
and
seen
doing
it.
Doing things like the snooker guitar that came in a case that was also a pool table and then came with a matching set of snooker balls.
Yes.
You know, and all that sort of stuff. You know, and I guess Fender are just trying to say, we still make this, we can still do this, and it is still, and that's what NAMM's about in a way.
Well,
I found
we saw it this
year. They got to endorse it very weird.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say, we saw it this year with, you know, the, or maybe it was last year, the Pinball Machine guitar. And that, you know, they've been doing these kind of showpieces again for a couple of years. And that's what this is. Worth mentioning, they all have a custom inlay as well. And some of them are steel. There's some steel inlays these guitars.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, Matt, talk about the video, because the video is, as well as showing how the guitars are made and having a really good chat with the builder, there are some weird players showing them off.
Any of the cast?
None of the cast, unfortunately.
No.
Although DB Weiss, the showrunner, does play guitar in the video.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
The weirdest one for me, well, I guess the three main ones, you've got Scott Ian from Anthrax, Tom Morello, and
oh my god, Tom Morello in.
And Nuno Bettencourt. But Nuno Bettencourt did a post and he was like, yeah, I'm still Washburn through and through, but I couldn't say no when they asked me to do this. And I'm like, how was Nuno Bettencourt like the first person you thought of when you wanted to do a Game of Thrones guitar?
Yeah, it's so
and I mean,
weird.
Tom Morello, someone who's so, like, I mean, I know Tom Morello was in an episode of Star Trek and is probably massively into Game of Thrones, but someone who's, again, just, like, people spending loads of money and, like, you know, he's played the same, like, bits of guitar for 30 years to then, like, be in a video representing a £30,000 Strat. You're a bit like, what?
It was a very, very weird lineup. Because, again, you know, like, you know, you wouldn't necessarily associate Scott Ian with, like, Fender Tellies.
Is that what he played?
He's got the telly. Yeah. So yes, Scott Ian's got the telly. Tom Morello's got the Strat, and Nuno Bettencourt's got the Jaguar.
Of course.
And yeah, it's a weird lineup. They've obviously just gone like, who do we know that likes Game of Thrones? Get them in. And the video is cool. It is quite weird, though. It's quite weird to see those three. And they're playing the Game of Thrones theme tune on the guitar. Oh, right. Tom Morello's, like, using the whammy to do, like, different bits and stuff. He can't resist. Cannot resist.
Can I bring my whammy pedal in? Rather you didn't.
I'm bringing it in. But, yeah, do check out the video. Check out the guitars. They are very, very different from, you know, Custom Shop, Esquire, or the guitars that we love. But I think they're cool.
I guess the thing is, you forget that, actually, if you have all the money, there's nothing stopping you going to a dealer right now and specking up the most ridiculous, like specking up a guitar like this straight from the custom shop and going, yeah, I want, like, you know, I always remember one of the craziest options, and I think it was like an extra $800, was color matching. It's like, if you send in a color example of anything, they're like, we will match it and then paint your guitar in that color.
So we can do guitar notes pink.
Forget that.
Do the exact color.
So the only thing,
exact color,
and as you say, the only thing, Matt, standing between, you know, you and getting that is $35,000
plus the £800 for the color matching. I kind of think that's still why they still do these things. So, you know, there must be some people out there who are like, I don't know, whatever they do, someone who's made a fortune in running like nightclubs or something, who's got loads of
Game of Thrones themed.
No. But like someone out there who's, you know, who doesn't want to just get a butterscotch telly. You know, we do this because we love guitars.
Yeah.
But there are people out there who are guitar players who have a lot of money who also do other things that they want represented in their guitar. So, you know, it might be that they, I don't know. Like, remember when the guy from Lit got the martini glass inlay? You know, like things like that. You know, just like, I've got loads of money, I like ridiculous things, but I also like guitar, so I want my ridiculous things on my guitar.
I wonder how much it's going to cost me to get, like, a guitar in the shape of my face.
The thing is,
I want it in the shape as well as like with my face on it.
Okay.
I always said if I ran a guitar store, I had enough money, I would definitely go to Fender Custom Shop and go, build me, I'd buy a Lamborghini, I'd get them to build it in the exact same colour, and then when you open the boot, the guitar comes out as well with a matching Blues Junior.
Wait, didn't they do
like,
that?
Just do something like that. No.
They did that. Someone did that.
They've done cars and that, but they haven't done one where the guitar pops out of the boot.
Yes, they have. We spoke about it.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sure we have.
I think Matt's probably just talked about it before.
I think I've spoke about it. It's like that.
We've done 215 episodes. We've talked about everything before.
213. This is 213. Regular episodes. Of course, there's loads of additionals. Anyway, Headrush, you know, major competitors to the Boss GT1000 and the Line 6 Helix. Headrush with their pedal board and their gig board this week. They have announced their new pedal. Will it be something to rival the new HX Stomp? You know, will it be something? Will it be additional amps or new modes to rival the updates of the GT1000? No, they are thinking outside of the box. They have instead introduced the Looper Board, an $800 loop pedal.
That's quite a lot.
Nuts. It's pretty nuts. In fact, actually, well, it's $899 at MAP. So I saw this and was instantly like, this looks wicked. Because I like looping and I like doing ridiculous looping things, and I don't have any friends and I don't play any gigs. So I'm like, okay, I need to do lots of looping. So, you know, four loops, good.
Four loops, that's cool. How many did you get on the RC300?
Good question. You get three.
Yeah, there you go. So four, one more.
For one more loop. Coloured screen, like visual.
Not just
coloured,
it's the same 7-inch touch screen that they have on the gig board and pedal board.
Yeah. You also get a full set of onboard effects.
Yeah,
I thought it was quite interesting. A whole bunch of extra foot switches to control.
Built in loads length, of built in drum machines as well, all with their own effects.
Backing tracks, which can all be looped. Intelligent time stretching, which I thought was quite cool.
Yeah,
so you can tap in a tempo. Import and export. You can use it as an interface.
Yeah, it can go USB straight in, and you can run backing tracks off of your computer that way as well.
Yeah, the only thing is, it seems like they've basically just improved the looper on the head rush.
The looper on the head rush is amazing, though.
But the thing is, I think personally that one, I think it's too much money. I was like, and I think they really could have, because I assumed when I first saw a picture of it, it was going to be the same size as the gig board.
Yeah, me too.
But it's not.
It's the same size as the head rush.
Think about that, listener.
It's a looper that's the size, and bear in mind that the Headrush pedal board was bigger than the Helix. I think the GT1000 is pocket sized in comparison to.
I think they've made a couple of errors, unless they're obviously planning other things down the line. But I think what they're going for is someone plugs in their acoustic, someone plugs in their keyboard, someone plugs in all their other bits and pieces into this one thing, and then it's got all the effects in it. But rather than having the effects layout like the Headrush pedal board, it's got the looper layout instead, because it's basically a Headrush pedal board. It's just they've jigged around what's the main priority, and the main priority is looping. I think as a guitar player looking to loop, I think there are cheaper and more accessible, instantly fun options.
The
one thing that always stands out for me, and I think is almost a benchmark of any cool looper for guitar players, is the DL4. And I think if you don't cover that instant, like, loop, half speed, half time, stop with the kind of stutter thing that's created so many interesting, fun, great loops, then you've sort of lost it. And it seems so complicated to do anything apart from loop.
Do we not think though? Is this product not for someone who, you know, they're doing a set?
They're doing an Ed Sheeran set, basically. Yeah, you know, doing a multi-instrumental set. That's what they're trying to do.
Is it not for people who are like, okay, my options are, I'm doing this complicated thing. I could take a laptop and some sort of interface and some sort of floor controller, or I could take this all-in-one box that does everything, that is less likely to crash. You know, we've seen multiple instances, where laptops have crashed mid-set.
No one ever wants to bring a laptop.
Well, completely, yeah, because, you know, you'll spill a beer on it, or, well, they're not made, you know, a MacBook isn't made really for a kind of gigging environment. So is it not for that? Like, and I understand it's a lot of money, but, you know, how much are you going to spend on a laptop plus a floor controller plus a reliable interface?
Mm. No, I think you're totally right. I think there's a very, very specific customer for this, and I think really just speaking for me, I was like really hoping it'd be a crazy thing for just a guitar player who wants to do loads of interesting layered loop stuff, but actually really for someone who wants to do lots of different instruments into one pedal without having a separate pedal board and let that do all the work for you.
Because
I think the integration of effects is great, but a guitar player is never going to really make use of what's in that, because they're going to want to use their own. But if you're an acoustic guitar player or you're a vocalist, I think it's got a bunch of great stuff in that you're going to use aside, and you, like Mark said, you know, not bring a laptop.
Yeah,
that's what it seems to me. It's a laptop replacement, and, you know, is for someone, I guess, who's like the front person or someone in the band who's like controlling everything.
I agree. And that is good. It's just that it's also the price of a laptop.
Not really. Like, to get a musician's laptop, you need a MacBook Pro, which is $2,000. You know?
It would have been nice if this could have been kept down to the £500 mark.
Sure.
I think at $900, you have got to be so very, very invested in exactly this. You need to need exactly this. So as long as 11 Rack have built this with sort of the idea that you know, there's going to be a very niche handful of people out there who require a tool at this price point.
Well, I can only imagine that they've had feedback from people using the Headrush saying, "We love the looper, ideal, brilliant."
The looper
is
unbelievable on the Headrush. Have you used it? Like, it's got fantastic, like, the ability to not only infinitely slow down but infinitely speed up your loop.
Yeah, yeah.
On double timing it, on tapping either side of it, which just makes it a ton of fun. And like on that big pedal board, it's so well laid out. Everything's so clear. It's probably the best looper I remember at the time I was messing around with it. I was comparing it to the Helix Looper, and I was like, this is loads better. And yeah. Line 6 are essentially, they're kind of the, you know, they create the DL4. They're the people when it comes to a looper. And they, you know, it was very good, the Headrush. But
I assume that this looper board is the first in what will be, like, the looper gig board.
Yeah, totally.
Be the smaller version. I guess I was really hopeful for something that basically didn't have the effects that would just allow me to do some really, like, quick and complex looping stuff. Like, yeah. We were talking about the band that you saw earlier, Joe, who's running everything into a
Ditto times four, which is what was
Ditto
actually...
Times
they were sampling everything
doing
in.
That sort of stuff.
Yeah. And then the drummer was having to listen to that in order to play with it, which I thought was... incredible of the drummer to do that and keep time with it all. Amazing. But yes, yeah, you know, something like this would obviously be a fantastic solution. Matt Knight, tell me about Rare Fenders.
Rare Fenders. That wasn't the one I thought you were going to
Do you know what?
We've done some Fender already, so let's do...
It's just because we're running out of time and it was more interesting, but yes.
Well, we can do it. We've always got Patreon. We can do it on Patreon. Make them pay.
We're going to talk about the Fender rarities in Patreon in that case. So, Matt Knight, talk to me about Electro Harmonics.
Although I must admit, this product is a little bit more boring. But for some people, like myself, who run relatively complex setups from time to time, this is quite an interesting product. So this is the Electro Harmonix Switchblade Pro. Obviously, we're seeing an abundance of new, what I call utility pedals, enter the market. JHS had some at NAMM. We saw the Swiss Things from Earthquaker. And this is the upgrade to the Switchblade, which was always a kind of go-to cheap AB box for players when we worked in store. The Switchblade Pro is a AB box, but it has an AB switch, an A plus B switch, and then a bypass switch to bypass the whole thing. But what's really interesting is you've got a volume control for each loop. So if you're running, say, for example, two different... Or actually, take an example I had recently where I'm using Electro Harmonix Memory Man, which has always got a little bit of a volume drop when you turn it on. So you've got a pedal that's maybe a little bit more vintage and you just need to give it a little bit more volume. And you want to match it to the rest of your rig. So you can match up volumes, but you can also run it series or parallel. So if you want to run two delays in parallel, that's quite cool.
That's great.
Or if you want to run a drive and a delay in parallel and then blend in the dry level. Or just patch A straight into B and then use it as a straight ahead boost. So there's quite a few cool options that you can actually do with it as well. Obviously, you could run just out of the two sends and use it as an AB for amps. But the main thing is, obviously, you've got a standard input and output and then two loops. So the main idea would be that you would be running it for two different effects chains that you could then switch between, like flip-flop between A and B, or blending in two different types like a drive and a delay, and maintain some clarity in your drive while also running quite a kind of heavy sort of delayed sound.
Yeah.
What I think
it's a very, very cool little switcher box.
What I think is quite good about it is it's not a huge amount of money. They're saying $123.50. So I reckon it's going to be about the 100.
Very specific.
Well, I think it's going to be about the 100 quid price, roughly.
Yeah.
And for a box that does quite a lot, that's not a huge amount of money.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. The Switchblade Plus, you know, was always a great little ABY. These are a little cheaper. My only problem with AB pedals, I don't know why, and this could just be sort of the nature of Tim, the guitarist in my band. I don't know, since I've known him, he's maybe got through, I don't exaggerate when I say, like 7, 8,
or just of the Electro Harmonix one, or
no
just in general.
We try, so yeah, we first of all were using Switchblade Pluses and they were great, and I think at about the fourth or fifth one going down, we were like, right, let's find something else. So Fender do a cheap one. They're actually made in the same factory as the Morley ABYs. They're actually the same.
Just say
Fender or Morley.
I think there's like a few, like the Whirlwind one, I think, also
probably the same factory.
Yeah.
So we went for those ones. Same thing happened, went down. okay, thought, right, well, it's because they're cheap AB wires. I don't know. I don't know anything about electricity. Maybe there's something to do with the fact that, you know, you've got a guitar going in, two different pedal boards going into it, and then it going into two amps, and the fact that he's using it a lot. I don't know. Is it having to deal with a lot? Is the circuit under a lot of pressure? I don't know. But
is the circuit under just a bit stressed?
Yeah. Anyway, they kept breaking, so we thought, well, maybe we need to invest in an expensive one. Also, we're getting like terrible ground lift off of a lot of those ones. Ground buzz.
Yeah, ground noise, yeah.
Off of those ones. So we thought, right, let's get the orange one, because I want to do an expensive one that even has like a phase button on it, which apparently does something. So we were like, we'll get that. So we got the orange one, which was expensive, like 150 quid. The others are like 30, 40
yeah,
quid.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that one broke too.
Yeah, and, I just think it's a... I don't know why. I think they're all... Because they're so simple inside,
yeah.
I think it is just like a real simple circuit. Put it in a box, job done. The one that I've always liked is the ART Cool Switch, but...
they doesn't have a light.
They do have a light, but you have to power them.
Right.
So they'll work in active or passive mode. If they're passive, you don't get the light. And if they're active, you do
you
get the light.
You can put a battery in them, though. Can you not put
yeah,
a battery in
yeah, you can put a battery in
then
them,
I
yeah.
I guess if you leave them on a pedal board, then it's just
yeah,
going to run out.
Battery.
Totally,
yeah.
Totally. But they are also a bit breaky. So yeah.
I think the radial did a good one.
It's radial. It's radial that doesn't have a light. So we tried using that for a while, but it's just impossible in a live situation to remember where you are.
You know what will last ages and does have a light? The Boss NS2...
That's
LS2
a noise doesn't do. LS2. You can't do it. You can't switch between A and B, which is the switching that you
Matt,
need
when
to,
are you
be
gonna,
able to do.
When are you going to release a product that does that?
Hold on, I was just having a look at mine and just admiring LS3, how awesome it is.
That's what you want. You want an LS3.
Yeah, because you can do loads of different modes.
Yeah, but not.
But it's not really designed for. It's not really designed for doing. Well, you can do 2 amps if you're switching between one or the other, and then
yes.
obviously matching volume.
But you can't.
It doesn't
can't
really
have
do an
A,
B, Y.
Yeah.
I find
that quite weird, Matt. And you know, maybe feed this back that
An LS3.
Just make an A, B, Y that doesn't break.
A signature. Joe Branton LS3.
No, don't go that far. That's stupid.
Yeah.
But a little ABY that won't break. Lovely.
Yeah, yeah. I would like that. Did you know, I actually got an LS2 because I just presumed that it could do that. Because I thought when everything was breaking, I was like, you know what company doesn't break? Boss.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I found out, you know what company hasn't worked out that people want to use 2 amps at once?
I think the thing is that you've got to remember, we made the LS2 in like 1989.
Yeah, I know.
I think at that point, people were just running like mega stereo rigs.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one was actually like doing a sort of wet dry or like an ABY. They were like, why don't you just run both amps at once? What are you, crazy?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I totally agree. I think what would have even been nice is just an external jack in for in a second foot switch that just the Boss pedal would do the A B and then the third one would do the Y.
Yeah.
You know who would make you a very good one?
Bright Onions.
Yes, he would.
Yeah, Bright James Onion effects. Onion. Yes, yes. I think we do need to go back to that because we've sort of taped back together one of the old Fender ones at the moment, but yeah,
not ideal.
Anyway, that brings us up to time for this week's regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We're going to be continuing over on Patreon, which is a bucket of fun. We do a half hour extra episode every week on Patreon where we're going to talk about continued things from the news. I've also found some very interesting guitars on eBay that I want to talk about. And we're going to talk about
stop going on eBay
accessories as well. Oh, sorry, on Reverb. Well, it wasn't on Reverb. I would have got it on Reverb
Fine.
If it was on Reverb. I'm sorry. Anyway, what am I supposed to do now? Oh, yes.
The outro.
Yeah.
Patreon.
That's right. We're doing Patreon. You can support Patreon, yes, for like...
Not support Patreon, support, no, us,
support
on Patreon.
Us on Patreon.
Patreon have got enough money. They need no support.
They do have
we need
money.
The support.
Have you? They're changing the rules, actually.
Oh, don't. Let's not get into it.
They're making it more expensive for people to be like us, for like creators. But,
great.
But not us. We
are we under the bar?
Yeah.
Okay, well, people at home need to pay us enough so we almost get to the bar, but we're under the bar.
No, there'll never be a bar.
What do you mean that never a bar?
Because we joined Patreon long enough ago.
Yes,
that they're
mate.
Like, we're going to make sure that
OG.
Yeah, that you're the original people. It's called Founders. We're called Founders.
Nice.
Now. Yeah. So
the first men.
So if you were thinking about starting a Patreon, ha! But, you know, we've got a good one. Anyway, you can support us on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month gets you the regular episode, ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you all of that, plus the Patreon episode and loads of other mini-series too. And $10 a month makes you an executive producer and gets your name read out in one breath by me. Are you really not doing Game of Thrones?
No, we did that earlier. I thought do Shania Twain instead.
Oh, yeah, that's the same. Christopher Franklin, Andy Joyce, John Anglin, Adam Royce, Chris, Jake Cutmore, Robert Dozens, Rob Gould, Scott Hamilton, Doug Ramadan, Ernie Cooper, Ross Edwards, Nate Nagel, Stephen Ernst, Rob Grant, Matt Roberts, Steve Lee, Henry James Baker, Juan Correa, Aaron Sherman, Blake Wyland, Andrew Goody, Jamie Gump, Jake Gray, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lawson, Hans Arms, Robert Smith, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Rob Nordwick, Duncan Watson, Ed Bundley, Steve Markle, DJ Mark Ross, Michael McRae, Carlos Manta, Andy McKenzie, Brad Bridge, Blatton, Scott O'Brien, Laurie Anson, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moo Gravett, Phil Thompson, Adrian Day, Gunsayers, Matthew King, Scott Gaines, Sean Omar, Christopher Wolfe, Capitan. That was close.
Yeah.
Let's go, girls.
Oh, Matty.
You can, of course, follow us on Instagram at Guitar Nerds, on Twitter at Guitar Nerds, or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos, where we're putting out weekly lovely content.
A video every week.
A video every week.
Unbelievable.
We'll see you on the Patreon if you're going there. Farewell.
Patreon!
Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.